It's not like ka, ka, ga, ga. So if a word ends in a ka, it will in usage only go to the ka. Ga will only go to the ga. So we're only in usage, we're only going to be dealing with letters ending in the first and the third in terms of the mutes. Okay? Now, is that clear for everybody? Do you understand, Penny? That if a word, did you hear what I said?
I was changing my batteries. Okay. Yeah, words don't end in aspirates.
If a word in usage. Mm-hmm. So if there is a word that ends in an aspirate, it will revert back to either the first or third letter. So a second letter, ka, will go to ga, to ka.
Go.
Ka will go to ka. Ga will go to ga. Clear? And all the way down, that's true. So now, when we're going to change a letter into the first or third letter, if we're going to change a letter into a hard consonant or soft consonant, it's only going to be changing into the first or the third, which would be what? Ka, ga, cha, ja, cha, ga, okay? Ta, ta, da, fa, ba. Those are the first and third. Everybody with me on that? The first rule, if you have a hard consonant followed by a soft consonant, or vowel, because vowels are soft, okay? That hard consonant, where it's going to change to the third of its class, the third letter, because it's not going to ever change to the fourth letter is aspirate. So what is the philosophy there for that rule? Hard consonants and soft consonants can't come together. If you have a word ending in a hard consonant and a word beginning with a soft consonant, there has to be a sindhi. There has to be a sindhi rule. Right? Any problem with that? Okay. So if you have, look, if we're just looking for now at the spartial letters. If you have any hard consonant followed by any soft consonant, that hard consonant has to go to the third of its class, the corresponding soft consonant, because the hard and soft can't come together. Okay? What about number two in the opposite situation? Say if you have a, say just a soft consonant for now. Say if I have a soft consonant that's followed by a hard consonant. What will that soft consonant go to? All soft consonant except nasal, okay? What would it go to?
To the hard.
And which hard, first or second?
First.
It has to go to the first. So if you just kind of think in your mind, okay, you've got a hard consonant and a soft consonant, right? A hard consonant followed by a soft consonant, that hard has to go to the third. If you've got a soft consonant followed by a hard consonant, that soft consonant, right, has to go to the first.
When you started this, you said that words don't end in the second or fourth, which are the aspirates, so they have to go to first or third. But in this sandhi, we're not talking about the words ending in that. This is the middle of the words, right?
Yeah, but why did I even say that? I'm just trying to make it, I'm trying to simplify the scope for you.
Okay.
You're not going to have words ending in an aspirate. So all the words that, you know, you're going to have the word ending in a ta, or a da, or a cha, you know, or a ja.
Okay, I think I get it.
Yeah.
That's
fine. So now all I want you to understand, it's kind of a sweeping rule. This is a sweeping rule. Hard consonants and soft consonants can't come together without a sindhi. There's going to have to be a sindhi rule. If you have a hard consonant followed by a soft consonant, that hard is going to have to go to a soft. If you have a soft consonant followed by a hard consonant, that soft is going to have to go to a hard. Okay? So this is like a general rule. Now, say if not only do we have this hard and soft situation, we also have another problem. Hard and soft, your tongue will be pulled in, your whole vocal system will be pulled into what the following letter is, what the second letter is, in hard, soft, soft, hard. So So you have to have a sandhi. That same thing is true when you have dental palatal, right? Palatal is the stronger army. That's good. So palatal is the stronger one. It's going to influence the dental. But in when we're talking about external sandhi, it's going to be dental palatal, right? Almost always. So now we have, say, a dental palatal. Palatal is stronger. Mm-hmm. Comes second. Tongue is involved for both. Right? Remember where the tongues are involved. Palatal, lingual, dental. Right for everybody? Mm-hmm. The ka and pug group, the ku and, you know, ku group. No tongue. So we have these sandhi rules that are going to be involving palatal, lingual, dental. And we have the hard soft problem. Okay, for everybody? So now say you have a dental followed by a soft palatal. Say you have a dental tusk. Let me know if you do. First one. Say you have a dental tusk followed by a hard palatal. What is a hard palatal? Hard, so that's not a problem, right? But dental palatal is a problem. So what does this have to go to?
Dental will go to the palatal.
And which one?
Sure.
It will always go to the...
It goes to one.
The body goes to the...
Non-aspirate. It will always go to the non-aspirate. So in this case, this will go to...
Sure.
So let's look at it this way. Hard. No problem there.
Right.
Okay. But dental palatal problem. So this has to go to Chub. What if it's, well, let me write this down even, what if you have the dental followed by the aspirate Chub? What will it go to? Still to the first. Because a word isn't going to end in an aspirate. It only will go to the unaspirate. It will always go to the first letter. Okay? So now what if we have the ta followed by ja and the ta followed by ja? Hard, soft problem. Dental, palatal problem. Both have to be addressed. Right? Because you can't have a soft following a hard. That will influence the hard. And so which one is this going to go to?
Joe.
The third of its class. Okay? Hard, soft, desperate. Hard, soft, a problem. Dental, palatal, a problem. What is it that's to go to? Yeah, first. Is everybody with me completely?
Yeah, first.
Third, sorry. Third. Mm-hmm. You with me completely? You with me completely?
Yep.
Here's the palatal, okay? The palatal. Palatal. Now we're going to go into the lingual.
Mm-hmm.
Hard. No problem. Dental, lingual. Denta, mudanya.
Dental, which is the lingual.
Always will go only to the first or third. Since this is hard, it's going to go to the first. Hard, aspirate, dental, lingual. Will only go to the first.
And the reason, again, it only goes to the first or the third is because of the aspirate, because the words cannot end in
an aspirate. No, they will always revert back to their unaspirate.
And that's the only rule that applies there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give Bill, he had a good suggestion, to give you a list of all of these. Actually, the letters the words can end in, that'll kind of limit the field. I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Give you something, and I also have something in the Goldman's book. So I'll do that for you. That's a really good idea. Hard, soft. Hard, soft. Gentle, modern. Third. Hard, soft, aspirate. Third. Right?
Right.
Okay?
I think those two rules you said in the beginning are really helpful, the two kind of sweeping rules that you
yeah.
have, that you can only end in first and third, and then hard and soft don't come together.
Yeah. So I think if you study these now,
right.
the sibilants aren't really a problem, I don't think. They are considered soft, right? And so for this one, if you had for number one, any soft consonant, like for instance, that's a good question. Let me just clarify that for you. I'm going to erase this now. If I had hard consonant followed by a word that begins in a semi-vowel, like body, body means water, okay? Hard consonant, soft consonant. It has to go to the third of its class. Look at the rule. A hard consonant followed by a soft consonant goes to the third of its class. The semi-vowels are soft consonants. Okay? Cud, body. That wasn't clear to you, Lisa, is because I didn't put on, I didn't put on the board. If you look at the examples of number one, let's just quickly look at the examples of number one. Sucked, bhavati, sud, bhavati. That should be clear, right? But look at this. Mrit, gyatirekena. See that? Mrit, the second example. Mrit, gyatirekena. There's the va. Semi-vowel. Ta will go to the mrit, gyatirekena. So this is the same type of example here. Right. If I say touch, yachati, touch, yachati, touch, yachati, touch, yachati, right? And of course, a vowel also. If you have a hard consonant followed by a vowel, it'll also go to the third. So the third, fourth, fifth letters are soft. The semi-vowels are soft. And ha is soft. The first and second letters are hard. The sibilant sha, sha, sa are hard. Okay? Is that clear? Any more questions? You know what I would suggest? That you study this sheet and also go to page, I want you to bring questions to me next week after you've had a chance to absorb this. If you go to page 15, can do down to you can go all the way down for what we've taught so far. You can go all the way down to Op Bandha, all the way down, 3/4 of the way down, just for practice. I put the answers on the side, but my thinking was this: go this way, you know, cover it up and do it, then check your work. Then you can go back this way. You have to go this way first because you don't really know the meaning, right? But after you go this way and can do it, then you should be able to go this way and identify. And the thing is, it's this way that's really meaningful for us because most of us are only reading, right? So you need to have immediate recognition this way. So practice back and forth, okay? And then if it's not clear, then we'll go over it. Any vagueness next week, we'll go over it. Yeah, it goes from there. Then, of course, we're going to do this using the sutras, and that'll be another round. All right. Let's take this away for now and pull out the initial sutras and change gears here. Let me just point out another thing. You know this chart that we have saying Kantakalu, Murta, Dantaha, all of these. There's several different charts that tell you Sprishta, Ishak Sprishta, all of these, Jivaka, Ishak Jivaka. When we start doing sutras, these are the terms we're going to be using. So what I'm going to try to remember to do is all for now always give the English and the Sanskrit, but we're slowly going to be moving over to just using the Sanskrit. When you print out your new version of this, I want to show you something to look for. We don't really need it for today, but just so that you know what I've done. On page 2 of this, the third sutra down, Uran Praparaha, it actually has what we call an anuvritti, which is Adeshaha, coming down from 1150. You don't really need that anuvritti to read the sutra because the un is in the first case, which is the case that the adesha is put in. However, the adesha does come down, adeshaha does come down as an anuvritti, and I have that written out for you in the new version. Okay, so if you just make a little mark there by Uran Raparaha, note that I've made a little change there. The other change I've made, so you can make a little check mark on 1151.
So this has happened after this morning that you made this change?
Let me see here. Yeah, I made it. I got it on there. I don't know what time this morning.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay. And also, if you can make a little note that you remember I had put the wrong example. Mm-hmm. So that you should have crossed out that Iko Yenichi. Mm-hmm. I have put in the right example, two of them, Ad Gunaha. Okay. We might come back, I might work on Ad Gunaha today. But I just want you to make a note that correction has been made.
Okay.
Right, well. Today I'd like to start with 1168. That's where we left off. Bottom of page 2, 1168. This is an obvious sutra. We don't need to spend much time on it. The reason I put the sutra in is because it's a good example of anuvrtti, something that is going to be coming down in the next sutras. But let's take a look at it. What's nice about this sutra is it just shows how very thorough Padmanabha is. He takes nothing for granted, to speak of. Shabdasya, I'm going to break the sandhi. Swarm rupam shabdasya ashabdasagnya. Ashabda. And so this is number, let's move on that, 1168. And if you look at the previous 1168 now we're on, and the next one is 1169 and 1169 and 1170 and 1171. And so this swarm rupa is going to be coming down in the other sutras as an anuvrtti. But also this is kind of an interesting sutra. Swam rupam shabdasya ashabdasanya. It means for a shabda, and this is going to be the sixth case, right? So it's going to mean for a shabda, for a word, the swam rupam, its own word. When a word is indicated in a sutra for a given word, it is meaning only its own word. Like, for instance, if there's a sutra about the word Agni, this is the example they give. If there's a sutra concerning the word Agni, fire, it's only going to be in reference to this particular word, Agni, not Pavaka. Pavaka also means fire. So it's not going to apply to synonyms. It's only going to apply to, look on the next page, I have two words there. Jvorna, also means fire. So swam shabdam means for a shabda, its own form, only its own form. For a word, only its own form. Ashabdasagna, unless it's a technical word like vibhasha or paribhasha or some vriddhi or guna or some word that's a technical word, this doesn't apply. There can be other words that are being used if it's a technical word. But if we're applying a sutra to a particular word, then it's only to that particular word, not to synonyms.
I'm sorry, the word is ashabdasanya?
Sanya means a technical term.
Okay.
So not a word, the unagates.
Right.
Not a word, not a shabda,
uh-huh.
which is a sanya. A sanya is a technical term. Okay. So for a word, where the meaning is only its own form. Swam means its own form. Its own form of a word, unless it's a technical word. This is another Paribhasha Sutra, right? So let's look at how they translate this. In this grammar, when an operation is directed with regard to a word, the individual form of the word possessing meaning is to be understood, except with regard to a word which is a definition. And then the next page I have an example. Thus, a rule to Agni will be applicable. A rule to Agni, applied to Agni, will be applicable to the word composed of Agna and E. I'm just copying this out of the right. Not to words synonymous with Agni, such as Pavaka or Jvalanaha. Both mean fire. They're synonyms. Okay? So, as I say, it's kind of an interesting, just sutra, Paribhasha sutra, again telling you, you know, how to read the sutras. You might have that question, well, if I do that to any word that means fire? Or are we just doing it to this particular form, Agni? You see? And so why did I put this sutra, really? Because you don't particularly need this. You can get along without it. Mm-hmm. But I want the Swamrupa as an anavriti. Okay? That's why I gave you this. Mm. Right? So,
this is a Paribhasha.
Paribhasha. Paribhasha means sutras which are explanatory. They're directive. Directive sutras on how to apply the sutras, how to read the sutras.
And the word Paribhasha means definition, right?
It means definition or, yeah. But you have to, it's definition of application, right?
Is there a general usage also? At least in Hindi, Paribhasha doesn't mean definition.
But here it means, it's defining technical terms that commonly used, technical terms, technical case endings. These are our Paribhashas. This is a Paribhasha because it wants to make it clear. It's clarification on how to read the sutras, how to work with the sutras. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's an explanation of the definition.
All right, let me tell you exactly what it says about Paribhasha. Just so you can get the language. This is really a good book. It's hard to get. It's really good. We use it all of the time. I think it's out of print, but John at the ashram, Arsavidya Gurukulam, is making copies of this book to make it available. And if you get into Panini, you kind of have to have this. You have to have this because it's so... I mean, if you were to really want to study Panini, seriously, then this book is just so, so helpful. So let me look at Paribhasha. Because not only will it give you definitions, it gives you, like, look at, here's Paribhasha. This from here all the way down. Let me read you a little bit of it. An authoritative statement or dictum helping one, the correct interpretation of the rules, means sutras. The correct interpretation of the sutras, right? The sutras of grammar. Or two, the removal of conflict between two rules which occur simultaneously in the process of the formation of words. So it's a clarification, but that's still the correction, the proper understanding of the interpretation of the sutras is the overarching idea for the Paribhasha. Right? Then he goes on three. The formation of various words, various definitions of the word Paribhasha are given by commentators. The prominent ones being I'll have to look up how to read this. Paritaha vyapratam bhasham paribhasham prachachate nyasaha. Or paritaha bhashate yasa paribhasha prakirtita. I'll have to tell you what that means later. I don't know exactly. They go on and on and on. This is the best way to understand it. An authoritative statement or dictum helping one the correct interpretation of the rules or sutras of grammar. Okay?
It's more of an aid than an explanation.
Yeah, the correct interpretation of the sutra. See? It's not just a definition. It tells you how to read the sutra. Like, for instance, if you don't know that the genitive case is used for the stani, right? Or the audacia is put in the first case. You don't know how to read the sutra. If you don't know that the sutra is only referring to the word itself, not to any synonyms, you won't know how to apply. So there are a lot of rules like that, Paribhasha. So in this initial sutra that I have, the first few sutras, these are almost all Paribhasha sutras, telling you how to interpret a sutra.
They give you the framework for the Rasika Sutra that you read.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't know them,
right,
you don't know how to read the sutra. Okay for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, so. Let's go to the next sutra. So let me put this here. Another paribhasha.
Mm.
I'm going to break the sandhi. An. Ujit. An ujit savarnasya. Un is the pratyaha. Okay. What is the pratyaha?
Vowels and
semi-vowels. That's what it is here. It's vowels and semi-vowels. Oh, we didn't do our Maheshwara. Let's do it right now. Ready? Iun, Rurik, Aon, Iouch, Hayavara, Lan, Nyamalananam, Japan, Kagadash, Javagadash, Kapachatata, Javata, Kahai, Shadasar, Hal. Good. Yeti Maheshwara, Yisrani. Good. Okay. So, Ayun Rulis, Gayon, Ayat, Chayavat, Hayavat, Yan. Okay. So now what do we have? We have vowels. And semi-vowels. What are the vowels? Which are pretty high for the vowels? All the vowels? And for the semi-vowels?
Young.
Okay. Young. Ujit. What would Ujit mean? Let me break the sandhi here.
Okay.
Udit. Udit. Okay. What is it when you see a dakara or a dakara? Now I really need you to remember these sandhis that we just did. It's actually ut plus it. And here you've got a hard consonant followed by a soft consonant, right? So that's going to send you together as udit. When you have in a sutra, this is that paribhasha sutra that I've not taught you, but I've told you about. What happens when there's a takara?
Only that mantra.
Only that mantra. If there's a takara, only that mantra. So that means... If we have the letter U as an it letter. If we have the letter U being used as an it letter, what is an it letter? It's
so
also called...
So the it letter, the sakara and the it letter refer to the E, so then how do you refer to just the mantra E? If that it letter...
No, it letter is a word. An it letter is an anubandha. Right, so this is itself a word, so it's not being used as a...
I know, but I'm saying then how would you use a takara to just reference the mantra? Because then...
It would be the context, yeah. Good, yeah. I understand.
Okay,
but so that's a little complication. It's always taken care of by the little vritti or basha.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So, but I want you to understand this. This takara tells you that it's only going to be a short through as an it letter or an un, which is going to be the vowels and semi-vowels. Okay? In that case, vowels and semi-vowels are going to refer to are for the savarna letters. What is savarna? Tulyasya, Priyatna, what's that? Priyatnam Savaranam, Tulyasit, this 119 Tulyasit Priyatnam Savaranam. What are the Savarana letters? Yeah, like for A, for instance. Itself has 18 forms. Right? So if we have an un, any letter in the un, this is a Pratyahara. So an un letter, right? An un letter is going to be for all of its savarnas. So for instance, if you see the letter A being referred to in a sutra, it stands for all 18 forms. Unless it has a takara. If it has a takara, then it's only that mantra. Short, you know, Rasva Jitaka Pluta. Okay? But unless that takara comes, which is going to be a limiting sutra, this un will include in the sutra all 18 forms, all the savarna letters of it. Okay? And for the semi-gals, right? What would be for the semi-gals? Just the semi-gal and the nasalized semi-gal, because there's a nasalized semi-gal. Okay? Now, so that's going to be for the savarna letters, anuvritti, swam rupam, including itself. This isn't really necessary here, but I'll explain why you have to have that. If you have, there's another sutra that will make this more clear. You want to know that in the un-pratyahara, it's going to include all of the letters of that pratyahara, including itself, including the Because say if you have, there's another sutra that's going to clarify this. It's a little point that probably just confuses you and doesn't, is not that helpful, but nevertheless. This is the first letter of the pratyahara. This is the it letter. This pratyahara includes everything up to the it letter, including itself. Okay? So the swam rupam is going to be everything that its own form, right?
Oh. The first name.
Yeah. It's going to include its own form and all the savarna letters of a, e, u. So you can also take it both ways, I guess. If you have the letter a in a sutra that's being acted upon, it's going to include all of the savarna letters, including itself. They also apply it, that this savarna, to a pratyahara, and we'll see the sutra for that. If you have a pratyahara, it'll include all of the letters in the pratyahara, including the initial letter itself. Okay? It's a point that you'd probably take to be obvious, but still has to be pointed out.
I got lost about the it letter.
I haven't done it yet.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, you're not lost. You're not lost yet.
No. Okay. You're hanging out there. Waiting to lose me.
So now what we know so far is that you have an un-letter, which includes the semi-vowels, right? The vowels and semi-vowels. That is going to refer to itself, whatever the letter is, and all of the savarna letters. It's for the savarna letters, including itself, swam rupa. Including itself, it refers to all of the savarna letters. Okay? Clear? What if we have something that has an u, a short u, as an it letter? Right? Then also, it refers to all of the savarna letters. So let me give you an example. What if we have the letter ku? What if you see in a sutra ku? What does it refer to? This is the it letter, short u. And the, right? Right? Because all of them are guttural, right? And then all of them are the same asya, and the same priyatna. What's the priyatna? Sprishta, right? Mm-hmm. These are all sprishta, and they're all, right, guttural. Okay, so ku would equal itself, swamrupam, and okay, what about you? Sin. Right? and sin. Everybody clear on this? And same, all the way down. And these are actually, they're used a lot. So in just in short, you have, I'll always say, like, for those who, when I'm teaching this, say ku or pu. You know, what is it? It just all of the asya kriyatna for ku. All the sabarna letters for ku. All of these are sabarna. Right, this is sabarna, this is sabarna, this is sabarna, this is sabarna, this is sabarna. So look at this sutra now. Swam, un letters include their sabarna letters. So if you see it in the sutra, that means vowels and semi-vowels, right? Udit letters, letters that have an indicatory U. And where is that indicatory U that it U used?
Here.
This is where it's used. Okay? Those are for the sabarna letters and swarmrupa siya, you would say. When you bring down the swarmrupa, you can change the case ethics to fit into the sutra. So it's for it. For its sabarna letters, including itself. So you could say sabarna siya, swarmrupa siya. Right, for itself and for its sabarna letters. It includes itself.
What is the chair of the prayer?
What is
the
chair
of
the prayer? Yeah, let me think about that for you. I'm looking at the preceding sutra. Just from reading the English, and if you just think the way that I just said it, if we went like this, and I put it in the proper case, swasya, rupasya, okay? Its own form, right? The un. Unudit, this is a compound, unudit, mm-hmm. Or what is that fun? No, I have another down. Could be like this, the unandudit, unandudit, the unlettered and udit letters, they are for the sabarna letters and for themselves. They include the sabarna letter together with itself. That's why the form of that has to come down. Pratyaha, except for an affix. Unless the word is an affix. Okay, then that's not going to count. Pratyaha is an affix, right? Pratyaha, except for it being an affix. But actually, let me just mix this up for a minute. I didn't think about that. Let me see what it says in here. Where they're actually placing the chuff. All right, in the ritik here, they're using the cha twice. They're using the cha to separate the un-udit cha, un and udit. Mm-hmm. That's all. Okay, the un and the udit. They're also using the cha for the savarnasya cha, right? Swasya rupasya. But in the sutra, that swasya rupa, the swam rupam that's coming down, remember you can decline it as it needs to be used in the sutra. So because that's coming down, the first cha is probably going just to the unviewed disc, which are actually in the sutra. However, when I'm reading the vritti, they have a cha for both. Right, okay? Does that make sense what I'm saying? If I read the vritti here, it says un, grihyamanaha, when the un is being taken, okay, uditcha. The un uditcha. There's your cha. This is the vritti I'm reading. Mm-hmm. Savarnanam grahakaha bhavati swasya cha rupasya, and for the rupa, okay? So you take it, that it includes all of the savarna letters and itself. So they're using the cha twice.
Does that imply that udit is
it's not a compound? It's not a, in the way they're using it in the vritti.
Okay.
It's just in the nominative singular, un and udit.
Okay.
You can't really tell that whether or not it's a compound, right? Because it's going to look exactly the same.
Mm.
The way they break it here in the vritti, they're not having it be a compound. Okay. So that way the cha would be un and udit letters are for the savarna and its own form. So it's a technical point, Kiki, and I don't really know the answer, except how they're saying it in the vritti. Everybody get this of pratyaha? Pratyaha is an affix, so not if it is being used as an affix.
So this one doesn't make clear that you just have to say cool. I mean, in this case, you could also say, well, cool includes gaka gaka.
That's right. Cool includes itself.
No, not cool. Cool. Like you could say goo or goo.
You wouldn't say goo.
I know, but I'm saying this one doesn't
make that clear. It doesn't make that clear. That's right. But when they use this goo, they use it only with the first, like, you know, they don't say goo.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All it's going to be clear or two. All right, for everybody? All right. Our time's up, actually. Let's see where we are. Okay, well, we have two more sutras to do with this. Unless I add any more, I'm going to go into the book. So next week what we'll do is another four sutras or so, half the class on the Sunday, confident Sunday, and then finish this off, and if we can go into the book, we will. Okay? Look, yeah.
Shanti, shanti, shanti.